the yoga of distinction between kshetra and the kshetrajna is the chapter we are learning, chapter number 13. So kshetra is defined as prakriti, and kshetrajna is also known as purusha. But kshetra includes everything that is jada, that is inert, which is the entire universe of things and beings, including you and me. We are jada, we are inert. When do we find that out? We cannot find it out on our own. But when somebody passes away, we see what jada means. Because that which kept it active is gone. Now it is the same body, same mind, same intellect, same eyes, same ears, same nose, same skin, same tongue. Cannot do a thing. Cannot do a thing. Which reveled through that inert matter is gone. That's how we know. We never will find out how it will happen to us, because we think we are this body. Otherwise, we can find it out right now, here and there. There's no problem. But we refuse. Time and time and time and time again, we identify ourselves as this body, this mind, this intellect, this ego. But the consciousness that is all pervading and is also within us, and that consciousness that's within this BMI equipment is called conditioned consciousness. There is space outside everywhere, and then there is space in this room, and this space conditioned by these four walls and the ceiling. We identify it as a room. And we tend to think that this is different than that space, but it's not so. Because it was never so that this space was not part of that space. It was never so that this space was separate from that space. And yet, we come to identify this as a conditioned space, 4,000 square feet of wonderful luxury condominium in Midtown Manhattan. That is our conditioned space. So that conditioned space is what we are attached to. And we think that's what we are. So in our case, this inert matter at individual level, and it as part of the totality of the world, the universe of things and beings, is prakriti, is the matter. We learned that. We also learned that the one that knows this matter is the knower of the field. So this is the field. And the one who knows the field is knower of the field. Very simple. And that knower is called kshetrajna. Kshetra means field of knowledge. Jna means knower. Kshetrajna, knower of the field. So we learned that in the previous verses. Then we also learned that in reality, what we call the purusha, the knower, the experiencer of this world of things and beings, or all the experiences that are offered by this universe, the one who experiences that is purusha, the knower of the field. But we also learned that in reality, this prakriti, the inert matter, and the one that we call kshetrajna, the purusha, the knower of the field, are one and the same thing. We learned that in the previous verses. And so they both are classified as Prakriti. The difference is the field of knowledge, the kshetra, the matter aspect is called apara prakriti, lower nature of prakriti. And the purusha, the knower, as we know it, is called para prakriti, higher nature of matter. That which is enlivened, higher nature of matter. But nonetheless, they are both matter. They are both prakriti. So now there is a little bit of confusion in our mind sometimes as to why, what was different became the same. And then if they are both the same, then what is the real kshetra? Yeah. Who is the real knower? And so Paramatma, the Lord, said very clearly that that knower, that real kshetrajna, is me, Lord. So then you looked at the Lord and says, what about me? So the Lord says, go back to ABC, start learning again. Why? Because you are that. The Lord and you are not different. You are that. So in 18th verse, Bhagavan explains that what is the true knowledge? Gineyam jyotisham apitad jyotihi tamasa paramuchyate jnanam gneyam jnanagamyam rudhi sarvasya vishtitam. Says that Brahman, that light of the lights, that is also beyond darkness, because that light also illumines darkness. We talked about this in the last class, remember? That when you walk into a dark room, you know it is dark. So somebody is illumining that thought that it is dark. Make sense? Right? So that illuminating power, that light, is the real knower. So in the 18th verse that Anilji took, says, that jnanam, that knowledge, that jnayam, that which is really to be known, and that which is jnanagamyam, that which is reached by knowledge. It's all sitting here. Bhagavan says, ridhi sarvasya vishtitam, that which you really want to know, to be your own self, to be your real nature, sits right here. That's why we said, for the masters who have known this, comprehended this, and lived this knowledge in day-to-day life, for them, as that little Urdu couplet says, Dil ke aine mein hai tasveer yaar, in the mirror of my heart, I have my beloved's tasveer, beloved's picture, beloved himself, herself, whatever. Dil ke aine mein hai tasveer yaar, so I don't have to go around looking for it. Jab jara gardan jhukai, dekh li. Anytime I want to see myself, I look at my heart, I see her, see him, whatever the case may be. The point is what? That's not out there. Point is, it's here. And that is the principle that illumines what you seem to be experiencing. And yet, in our utmost ignorance, we keep thinking that I am experiencing this as this body, mind and intellect. We have this amazing funny feeling that I am the doer. I am the enjoyer. I am the owner of that wonderful 4,000 square foot condominium in Midtown Manhattan, right? Conditioned space. Because of that attachment to that experience, we keep going through this migration cycle of birth and death and the life full of nothing but sorrow. And so, in the next couple of verses, the Lord clarifies this issue very, very, very well. And so, I think we saw 19th last time, right? Verse number 19 last time, right? We'll read it again and we'll again revise it before we go to 20th. Iti kshetram tatha jnanam jneyam choktam samasatah madbhakta etadvignaya madbhavayopapadyate. The Lord says, I have, in brief, explained by now, that is up to verse number 18, that filled kshetra, that knowledge, that is that which is to be known, and the real knowable. Here the word knowledge is used to indicate kshetragna, the knower of the field. And that gneyam is the real knowledge. We talked about this. Intellectual comprehension of knowledge is that, just that, intellectual comprehension. Becomes a value to be lived in life. Once we start living this value in our life, it becomes a virtue. And that virtuous living is called gneyam, that which is to be known. Now here, what is that virtue that we are talking about? We intellectually seem to have comprehended that this world of inert matter, known as all names and forms, and because we are part of that world, we are no different, no separate, no independent from that. So we are also that inert matter. So that world of matter is called kshetra. And the one that seems to know this kshetra, plays in it, is kshetragna. So kshetra is what we have known. Kshetragna, in a relative sense, we have known. But behind this knowledge, which is intellectual comprehension, there is something that is really to be known. That is, that kshetragna is not this BMI, but it is the home. It is the substratum of this entire ever-changing universe. And that is me. It's not somewhere there. That is me. That is the real knowledge, and that is identified here with the word gneyam. And if you go through verses 13 through 18, the Lord talks about this gneyam only in verses 13 through 18. And according to Swamiji, Gurudev, Swami Chinmayanandji Maharaj, we said this last time also, that in the first 18 verses, Lord Krishna has, in his own inimitable way and style, very briefly but very concisely explained the entire principle of Vedanta, the entire principle of Hindu scriptures. It is that profound. What's coming forward, 19th onward, is but more explanation of that same thought through various angles, so that that thought becomes more and more clear to us. But the thought is, I am that. I am that Brahman. I am that substratum which is unchanging, over which the entire universe of names and forms seems to oscillate. So with that understanding, let's go to verse number 20. Going forward in verse number 20 through 22nd, Lord Krishna explains the oneness of Prakriti and Purusha. What appears to be different is not different. The Lord clarifies that from various angles. So with that, let's lead and follow, recite verse number 20. Prakritim Purusham Chaiva Vidadyadi Ubhavapi vikaramscha gunamscha iva viddhi prakruti sambhavan. Prakritim purusham chaiva, both the prakriti and the purusha, cha eva, both. Vidyanadi, viddhi, know it to be what? Anadi, endless, beginningless. So that statement should be clear, whether we understand it or not, the statement as such should be pretty clear that purusha, rather the prakriti and purusha, both are beginningless. Now we have to understand why the Lord says this. Okay. Before we get to that, let's clarify what is Prakriti and Purusha as it is explained in this particular verse. Because in the second line it says, Vikaramscha Gunamschaiva Viddhi Prakriti Sambhavan. All changes, all modifications, all qualities that we seem to experience are born of Prakriti, not of Purusha. Purusha is changeless. Prakriti is ever-changing. And so, all the changes, modifications, vikaras, whatever we see around us in this world of names and forms, they are there because its cause is Prakriti. So, in reality, Prakriti, as we call it, is the lower nature of that Maya, that Prakriti. And Purusha, as we call it, as of now, is the higher nature of that same Prakriti. And therefore, they both have a name, Apara Prakriti and Para Prakriti. Apara Prakriti is the lower nature, which is known as Prakriti in general. Para Prakriti, which is the higher nature of Prakriti, is called Purusha. We also know that Purusha is also called Kshetrajna, the knower of the field, because Prakriti is called Kshetra, the field of knowledge. Therefore, it would be fair to say that the higher nature of Prakriti, which is called Purusha, is the enlivening principle of Prakriti. It is that which seems to bring it alive, bring the Prakriti. The lower nature of Prakriti is brought alive, is enlivened, is induced with Chaitanya by the higher nature of Prakriti, which is also called Purusha. Are we together? So, Apara Prakriti, the lower nature. Wouldn't it be fair to say that the lower nature is the lowest line, object, emotion, thought? So the lower nature of Prakriti, which we call Prakriti in general, are the object, emotion, thoughts. But what happens to them? They are experienced by whom? The perceiver, feeler, thinker. That is the knower. Or so it would seem. So then, what we are saying is, the OET, the object, emotion and thoughts, experienced by the Para Prakriti, Purusha. Now, how does it experience that? Through what? The top line, VMI. So, the lower nature of Prakriti, PFT, rather OET, object, emotion, thoughts, are experienced by the Purusha, perceiver, feeler, thinker, through the equipment called body, mind, intellect. Because of incomplete vasanas, stored results of actions that have not fructified yet, which are called vasanas. So both this lower and higher nature of Prakriti are not independent at any time. Because what is OET? The world. Object, emotion, thoughts. It's the world. The totality, right? What is PFT? That is the individual, the jiva. So the individuality is there, the totality is there, and therefore the experiences experienced by the jiva, the individuality, because of the totality that throws stimuli at the individuality. When we use our five senses of perception and see the world sends stimuli to us, which the sense organs take it to mind, the mind takes it to the intellect, and depending on the purity of the intellect decides how to act upon those stimuli and goes back through mind and through sense organs to BMI, to body rather, and tells the body to react to that stimuli. See, that's how it works. And therefore, this lower and upper nature of Prakriti, which is called Kshetra and Kshetrajna, or the world, and the Kshetrajna also is known as Jiva, the individual conditioned consciousness. Remember, we all have studied up to all these details in various texts. Sitting here, Anilji has pounded time and time again these concepts to all of us who are seated here. And so this should be fresh. If not fresh, at least it should come back from the back of our mind where it is stored, hopefully. This is why swadhyaya, daily study is required, whether you come here or not, so that this understanding develops quickly and thoroughly. Because we can't keep renewing this understanding of these concepts every lecture, right? Because we are intelligent students. We build on what we study today so that we understand what's coming tomorrow. So that is expected. Bhagavad Gita is a very serious text. And vast majority of us here, actually every one of us except Michael Prabhu, are senior students here. At least from attendance standpoint. So we should, if we haven't done well, then we should go home and resolve to spend 15 minutes a day, no more. If you're enthusiastic, half an hour, that's it. Half an hour a day of absolutely total dedicated time to review what we have studied. Very important. I had a friend in middle school. I was in primary school when he was in middle school. I finally went through primary school, middle school, and went to high school. He was still in middle school. Wasn't able to move up. We should be doing that. We should be constantly moving upward. We should be clearing grade 7, 8, 9, 10th, 11th, 12th, high school, college, postgraduate, PhD, post-PhD. So, go home and study a little bit. Then this will become a lot more exciting. It is exciting. So anyway, what we are saying is the jiva or the kshetrajna or the purusha is there. The world of object, emotion and thoughts, the world of names and forms is there. So long as the world is there, the totality, and so long as the jiva is there, the individuality, and because that individual entity performs action with the sense of doership. I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. And therefore, every action that doer performs must have results. And those results can only be given by Ishvara, the Saguna Brahma, the Brahman with attribute. And therefore, so long as the world of OET is there, And so long as there is a PFT person, perceiver, feeler, thinker, there is Ishvara, the Lord, to give the results of those actions that we perform. But in reality, we know that the Ishvara is there only as long as the Jiva and the world is there. But in our studies, we have also known that there is no such thing as Jiva. And there is no such thing as world. There are only projections on that substratum called Brahman. And so if there is no Jiva, and then there is no world, there is no Ishvara. There is no Saguna Brahman. Because Saguna Brahman is only there to give results of your action. But if you are not there, and by that I mean the one who identifies with this BMI is not there, then there is no Ishvara, because then there are no results of any actions you do, because then every action you do is for the benefit of the people, and therefore it's not binding on you, and therefore it does not hamper you in going through the cycle of transmigration. You are free of that. And therefore, if there is no Jiva, there is no world, therefore there is no Ishvara, then what is left is the total single reality, the Brahman, attributeless Brahman, without second. So if everything we saw is nothing but a play that seems to be there on the substratum of Brahman, then how can those things that seem to appear on the substratum can have any beginning? That's why they're called beginningless. See where we came from, where we ended. We started with the premise that the Purusha and Prakriti are beginningless. And the conclusion that we drew is, yes, they are, because they are part and parcel of the total one single reality. In fact, they are actually not there. They are only a play on the substratum. They appear and disappear. They appear and disappear. Therefore, Purusha and Prakriti are both called beginningless. Who has vasanas? You and me. What are vasanas? Unfulfilled desires. Who have those desires? You and me. We are full of it. Day in and day out. We are full of desires that are not complete yet. At the age of 72 years old, we got our first grandchild. You think we have no vasanas? Are you kidding or something? That first grandchild just now. We have so many desires about what to do, what not to do, or that grandchild and what else, whatever. So we all are full of vasanas. And what are we? We just said that. What are we? Prakriti. We think we are Purusha, but we are not. We are Prakriti. So yes, unfulfilled vasanas are, they belong to Prakriti, because they are born of Prakriti. That's exactly what's coming, the next. They are born of Prakriti. They are not born of Purusha, the real Purusha. The real Purusha is desireless. When you have everything, let us suppose that one day you wake up and all your memory is gone. And you wake up on this one beautiful beachfront island on which nobody but you are there. Nobody. Not even a soul, not even a bird, nothing, just you. Then you look at the island and say, wow, I don't have to worry about anybody else grabbing anything here. It's all mine. And if it's all yours, would you have any anxiety that somebody might take it? Would you have any anxiety? Would you have any anxiety that somebody will take it? No. Why? Because it's all yours. So when it's all yours, you have no worries. It's all you. It's all yours. That's what happens to the mindset, to the intellect of a master who realizes that this is all me. She's me. She's me. You are me. You are me. and I'm everywhere. And so if I'm everywhere and everything is me, where is the question of jealousy, greediness, fear? It doesn't come. Because all these lower tendencies come because we have this concept of me and mine and you and yours. I want to keep what is me and mine. And I want to constantly attempt at taking what's you and yours. That's human life. That is human life. We want to keep what we have. And we want to acquire what we don't have. That is human life. And that's where all the grief is. But when there is nothing else, what is there to gain? What is there to lose? Where is the grief? Where is the sorrow? So a realized master looks at the world and says, this is me. This is me. So whatever he or she does it out of happiness, joy and bliss in his or her heart. And only does it because it's beneficial to others. He has no desire. Gurudev, Swami Chinmayanandji used to travel 210 days out of a year. You think just momentarily, 210 days out of a year, international and national traveling. Living at different place, eating at different place, sleeping at different place. Traveling all the time. By plane, by train, by car, by any conveyance possible. 210. I have never, ever seen him sad or unhappy. Every time you see him, he's bursting out with joy. He's happy. The very presence of Gurudev used to make us so happy that we used to forget everything around and within us. Why? Because he was the master. To him, everything was him. Nothing was not him. And therefore, there was no cause for unhappiness. It was all blissful, joyful, happy life in dedicated service of the humankind and others. That's what a real master is. So, to once again answer your question, yes, the unfulfilled vasanas, the desires, belong to Prakriti, not to you, the real you. Understand? Are you clear? All the desires belong to Prakriti, not to Purusha. So let us say, so what we are saying is, Prakriti and Purusha are beginningless and they are nothing but part of the Nirguna Brahman, the attributeless Brahman. So this you can explain. Brahman creates everything and Brahman enjoys everything. There is nothing else there. You think of your dream. Who projects the dream? Who projects the dream? Mind projects the dream, right? Who enjoys the dream? Mind enjoys the dream. The one who projects also enjoys. But is there real enjoyment? When the one who is dreaming wakes up, there is no validity to that dream. There is no validity to what you seem to have enjoyed in that dream. There is no validity to projection of that dream. But that only happens when you are awake. So when we get awakened to our real status as the all-pervading reality, there is no dream and there is nothing to enjoy. Am I getting through? There is no, just as in dream we project something. And there are people, and there are places, and there are things, celebrations, sadness, this, that, everything happens there, right? And who is enjoying? We as a dreamer are enjoying there. We get married in dream, we get divorced in dream. But when we come back to real life, and we realize that we haven't divorced, we feel sad. I'm just kidding. What I'm saying is, the real life
you realize that what happened in dream has no validity. You see what I'm saying? There is absolutely no validity to what has happened in dream. If you went to a party in the dream and you stuffed yourself up to here, and then you wake up, you are not going to feel stuffed to this. You are going to be hungry like crazy. Because you have had a big dream and now your saliva is coming out of your mouth and you have to have something to eat, otherwise you are going to starve. So the dream food does not help you. Right? Similarly, we, the dreamer, dreaming of the world of pleasures and pain, when we wake up to the reality, there is no world. Of course, remember, the world does not disappear. You become master, you become a realized soul, and you open your eyes and there is nothing but just barren land, nothing absolutely. No, the world remains exactly the same, exactly the way it is. What changes is your vision changes. You start looking at the world of things and beings in different light. You see the Lord in everything, and you see everything in the Lord. As you look at the relative reality, and then you look at yourself, and you have realized you have become this, the person of self-knowledge. And therefore you see everything, this is me, she's my glory, he's my glory, this is my glory, the birds are my glory, the trees are my glory, it's me. And then nothing remains except happiness and bliss. That's for all the masters. When that vision comes, then Jesus on the cross, nailed down, can say, forgive them because they don't want that. It only can come from the master. Cannot come from us. Because he has known the reality. He's beyond this pain and pleasure and this greed and this grief and this jealousy and misunderstanding. He's way beyond that. And therefore he understands that these are people who haven't comprehended the truth, the real knowledge, and therefore they must be forgiven, because every sinner has a future. Right? Each one of us, if we call ourselves sinners, because we should never do that anyway, if we call ourselves sinners, then we have the potential to become that master. That is what it means. We just have to wake up from the dream that we are involved in. We are living a dream. We must wake up. And to wake up from that dream, you need a teacher. That is why we all come here. Because Gurudev has, through his vision, created a place for us. Through everybody's participation. We need to use it. We need to make ourselves better. We owe it to ourselves. You are not doing it because you will make Anilji happy, or Neeruji happy, or Guruji happy, or Gurudev happy. You do it because you want to be happy. You don't come here because you want to show your face that I am attending Chinnamishan. If that becomes an issue, prestige issue, things that work. People go to parties because they want to be seen in certain company. They don't go to the party because they want to enjoy the party. Their preoccupation is they want to be seen with certain people, certain class, certain time. That's time wasted. Whatever we do, wherever we go, we must enjoy that moment, that experience. With this understanding that everything is me. What is there not to be liked? I'm not sure if we have done here a small Upanishad called Ishavasya Upanishad. Have you done that? The very first verse of that Upanishad starts with Ishavasyam idagam sarvam yat kinchat jagatyan jagat tena tyaktena bhunjita magradak kasya svidhanam. This whole world is enveloped by the reality. ईशावास्यम इदगम सर्वम यत किंचित जगत्यान जगत वट एवर लिविंग एंड नॉन लिविंग थिंग एंड बीइंग आर देयर इन दिस यूनिवर्स एवरीथिंग इज एनवलप्ड बाय द ट्रूथ नथिंग इज आउट ऑफ द ट्रूथ एंड वट एवर इज एनवलप्ड बाय द ट्रूथ इज ट्रूथ यू आर ट्रूथ आई एम ट्रूथ यू आर गॉड I am God, he is God, she is God. The shape, size, form, name, functions are different. Because there are different functions assigned to different people, therefore they have different forms, different name, different shape, different size. Something is a bangle, something is a necklace, something is an earring, something is a ring. But you take the God out of that, what remains? Nothing. So the fundamental nature of all of this is gold. The rest of it is all projection on the gold. And that projection is ever changing. People get tired of ornaments after 10 years. They go to India, they melt them, give it to goldsmith. The goldsmith melts them and creates new ornaments. And you give those wonderful looking ornaments to the goldsmith. Do you like it? He says, I don't care. All I am looking for is gold. He has no attachment to the shape, size, names and forms of those ornaments. They may be the most beautifully created ornaments. He doesn't give a damn. His mind is set on gold. What is the real stuff? He is set on that real stuff. That's what we should be doing. We are all sadhakas. We are all seekers. We are getting serious and serious day by day by day. Because this is getting in here. And what is it doing to us? Or what it should be doing to us? It should make us uncomfortable with what we are or seemingly what we are. It should make us uncomfortable as to what we appear to be. It should create that zeal to know what is our real nature. Then we have done something valuable in terms of studying here as part of this group, study group. Then it grows on you, it works for you. And don't be in a hurry to go anywhere. You don't necessarily have to become the realized master here and now. It could be tomorrow, could be next year, could be 10 years, could be 10 births, could be any time. Because what you have to do, you do. And rest of it is done by Him. His ultimate grace is required. I'm sure Anilji has related this little story, and if not, probably I also have related this story. But here's the story about how that faith works for you. This is story in Bhagavata. Bhagavan Naradji, the great Rishi, the great Brahmarshi, who was authorized and able to travel, transcending all three lokas, hell, earth, and heaven. He could go anywhere at any time, any place, without a moment's notice. That was the power he has achieved. So one day he is walking through the earth, heading to the Lord's Narayan's abode, going to heaven to see Bhagavan Narayan. He passes by and there is an old sage sitting with crossed legs, meditating, and he stops. Naradji says, Narad, this is one of the greatest rishis of our times. You can't call him like that, Narad. But the masters, the sadhakas, with their tapas, with their hard work, with their concentration on the Lord, they are allowed to call them like that. Says, Narad, where are you going? Narad says, I'm going to the Lord. And go see Lord Narayana. Oh yeah? Please ask him one question. Yeah, what is the question? Will you please ask him how long it's going to be before I get moksha? I get liberated? Can you please ask him? I've been toiling sitting here all my age. Look at how old I have gotten. I'm in my 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever. What is it going to take for me to get moksha? Go ask the Lord. Okay, I will ask. Okay. He moves on farther distance. There's a young sannyasi dancing under the tree. He's not even looking at Narada. So Narada stops. He says, "Hey, listen, young man, I'm going to the Lord. You have any message for the Lord?" He says, "No, I don't have any message. I'm very happy. You go and say my namaskara, my pranams, my to the Lord, and that's it. I don't have any message. I don't have any question. Why would I have any question? I'm very happy." He's dancing. So Naradji goes to the Lord, meets the Lord, whatever he has to do with the Bhagavan, he does it and comes back. Coming back, again, he takes the longer route and comes first to this old sage. As soon as the sage sees Narada, he says, "Aha! Are you back from Lord Narayana?" I said, "Yes, yes. Did you ask him my question?" "Yes." "What was his answer?" "Yes. The Lord has said that you have 3 more births before you can be liberated." He gets all upset and he throws away his clothes and everything that he has, little things, and says, "Hell with all this. I've wasted my whole year, I mean whole life of 60, 70, 80, 90 years, and I've been doing tapas. And for this, I have to still suffer for 3 more births. This is not worth it." Narada says, "Whatever you say." He moves on. That young sannyasi still dies. So Narada goes to him and says, "Stop, stop, stop." He says, "What?" "I have a message from you. I'm from the Lord for you." He says, "I didn't ask any question." You know, the Lord just wanted to tell you that you have as many births as there are leaves on this tree before you can get liberated. And the sannyasi goes wild with happiness. He says, "Now there is a fixed number." And the story goes that as soon as he said, "Oh, good, now there is a fixed number of years, now the end is in sight," story says he got liberated that very moment. That is the grace. Because of the absolute, total, unquestionable faith in that Lord, in that reality. That is how it works. So that faith is absolutely necessary. And with the faith, that hard work, focused work to achieve that goal is necessary. The pace can be your own. You can set any pace that you like based on how comfortable you are. You are not in competition with anybody. You are not in the race like the tortoise and the hare. We are not doing that. Everyone has their own pace at which he or she moves. But the ultimate goal should be the same, should be focused on. And everything we do by mind, by our speech, or by our action, should be done with that thought in mind. When we have faith in that Lord at these 3 levels, mental level, speech level, and physical level, then it works. So kshetra, being the part and parcel of that nirguna Brahman, that all pervading one single reality, they are beginningless. Only one Brahman is. Nothing else is. So that is verse number 28. And as I said, verse 20, 21st and 22nd. These 3 verses basically explain the oneness of that Brahman, oneness of the reality, in spite of all the apparent duality.
Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet, om asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritam gamaya, om பூர்ணமதஃ பூர்ணமிதம் பூர்ணாத் பூர்ணமுதச்யதே பூர்ணஸ்ய பூர்ணமாதாய பூர்ணமேவாவசிஷ்யதே. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்தி. ஹரிஹி ஓம் ஸ்ரீ குருப்யோ நமஹ. ஹரிஹி ஓம். சத்குருநாத் மகாராஜ் கீ.